Hello and welcome to this episode of DebtWired. I'm Laura Gardner, Deputy Editor of DebtWire Senior, and I'm joined today by Yvette Babb, Portfolio Manager for William Blair's Emerging Market Debt Team. Welcome, Yvette. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me, Laura.
Today, we'll take a look at some of the more stressed sovereign borrowers in emerging markets and to ask whether we are on the cusp of a sovereign debt crisis. It's fair to say it's been a volatile first half of the year for global markets, with interest rate uncertainty, inflation, Russia's war on Ukraine, and the overhang from the COVID pandemic piling pressure on the global economy. This pressure has been particularly hard for some EM sovereigns, with countries like Ghana and Sri Lanka defaulting in the past year or so. And a number of countries face large debt maturities in the coming months and years, which has raised concerns about their ability to meet them. So, Yvette, in your view, which countries are experiencing significant stress within emerging markets, and what are the underlying causes?
So thanks for the question. And I'd like to put the performance of the emerging market debt into context over the past half year, because as you mentioned, it has indeed been quite a volatile year so far. And so that, particularly in March, was associated with the banking sector crisis in the United States that weighed overall on investor sentiment. There has, of course, also been concern about the path of monetary tightening in developed markets, as well as the stickiness of inflation. But in fact, actually, for distressed credits, it's been a fairly good month. Overall, there's been some spread tightening, in particular in the high yield basket, driven by the distressed names within the emerging market debt universe. So that's not to say that the distressed markets are out of the woods. We've clearly have seen year-to-date spread widening in these names, in particular in the first few months of this year. And that concern has definitely been around the way in which these markets will be able to meet their external financing needs over the remainder of 2023, but also into the years thereafter, as we see maturities in the Eurobond space, critically quite large and lumpy repayments that are due for countries like Kenya, as well as Egypt. And overall, I believe that clearly the punitive pricing of external borrowing for these markets has been and will be challenging in terms of how these countries overall will look to meet their external financing needs. So we obviously had, as you mentioned in your introduction, quite elevated levels of debt default in the recent past. And, you know, if we look at the Moody's report for rated sovereign bond defaults over the past 3 years, the 2020 and 2022 figures were multiples of the long-term average, at close to 5% annual default rate in 2022. So fairly exceptionally high levels of default in 2022. I would, however, caution around extrapolating that trend over the near future. Clearly, as I mentioned, the fact that external borrowing costs remain elevated relative to those over the past 15 years is going to prove to be a challenge, as well as the fact that the global growth environment most certainly is going to also present perhaps somewhat of a less supportive backdrop if we were to see more significant decline in DM. But I think there are a few factors that may offset this for distressed credits. And some of those factors have unfolded over the past month, where we've seen an alleviation on concerns on an idiosyncratic basis. So some favorable developments and improved credit or perception of improved trajectories for a number of individual names, but also the overall macroeconomic backdrop and the stresses to that. You know, I think there's a path in which that could remain somewhat more supportive, and that would be driven by the fact that the EM-DM growth differential is improving in favor of EM, and that in fact we're seeing a mobilization of external financing from international finance organizations through augmented IMF programs and ancillary financing from multilaterals. And then clearly, of course, a belief that the restructuring processes are moving forward in some of the defaulted names. And so against that backdrop, I would say the countries that are deemed to be distressed have seen improved sentiment over the past month. And actually, it's those single B and lower rated distressed names where we feel there is still substantial value within emerging market debt. But the drivers moving forward will be twofold. And they will continue to be, one, the global economic backdrop, and secondly, the degree to which countries can improve the level of confidence in the trajectory that they're facing.
If we look at individual names, you mentioned some have seen an improved performance. I wonder which ones you're thinking about.
There's been notable developments over the past week in Nigeria. I mean, it's hard to ignore those facts, although they are very recent. So Nigeria has seen an improvement in its performance, driven by the fact that the current president has taken the market by surprise at the pace at which he's taken steps to remove fuel subsidies and, secondly, address the exchange rate challenges. He unified exchange rates, as well as allowed the currency to depreciate, and has suggested it will be free floating moving forward. So there's a clear sense of renewed optimism around Nigeria, which is reflected in quite aggressive spread tightening over the past week in Nigerian credit. Slightly longer ago, or rather If we take a slightly longer view, there has been somewhat of an improved sentiment in Kenya as well as in Egypt. In both cases, or rather, let me start with Kenya. The improved sentiment with respect to Kenya has been on the fact that the IMF specifically there has looked to augment the program and the fact that they gained access to RSF. I do also think that there has been a perceived improvement in fiscal management under the new regime with the introduction of the finance bill in Kenya, which introduced a number of new revenue measures, and the 2023-2024 budget, which was released in draft statement early this year, but announced this week in Parliament, for me sets the tone of fiscal consolidation and incrementally better assumptions when it comes to the macroeconomic underpinning of that budget. And then Egypt, you know, that one is on tenterhooks, but there is a perception that there will be increased asset sales towards the end of their fiscal year, although they're running out of time as that fiscal year ends at the end of this month. The overall belief, though, is that Egypt will be able to galvanize financial inflows on the back of sales of assets, and there is a perception that there will be financial inflows from some of their strategic partners that will alleviate the concerns there. And then, as I mentioned, for the defaulted names, there's a perception that the restructuring process in both Ghana and Zambia is making some headway out, and or that the IMF is proving to be somewhat more reconciliatory in the way in which it's viewing that. The latter is applicable to Zambia, where in Zambia's case, it seems that they are no longer insistent on MOU with official creditors being signed before they reach a conclusion on the second review. At least that is the way in which the market has interpreted comments from the African director at a recent public forum. And in Ghana's case, it seems that there has been an official proposal being made to official creditors. And so progress in those two names has helped the performance of the defaulted names within the EMD space. But I would say that the overall improved performance of high yield over this past month has more primarily been driven by the distressed names that we discussed earlier. So the Nigerias, Kenyas, and Egypts of this world. Tunisia's one we haven't discussed. It's another name where there is a perception that the European partners will come to the party with larger amounts of money, and that their pressure on the IMF, as well as a renewed proposal from the authority to the IMF, would galvanize further inflows into Tunisia. There is also the distress space, obviously not only Samia, but I won't expand too much on that here, but there has been quite a rally in some of the distressed names in LATAM, El Salvador being one of those.
Okay, thank you. You mentioned a couple of names with significant maturities, Tunisia, Kenya. Just wondering, given that Eurobonds, even if there has been an improvement, Eurobonds still remain quite expensive, prohibitive for these names even. What other options do you see to refinance or meet these maturities?
External financing costs are clearly higher than what they've been over the past 15 years. And part of that is, of course, where the risk-free rate is. US Treasuries, the 10 years, you know, at 3.2, this is clearly going to be part of the contribution to higher borrowing costs for the single B names. The other component is of course, elevated spreads for single B and lower rated credits, so the high yield and distressed names that we've been going through. So I would say it's hard to extrapolate current conditions into 2024. As I mentioned, I think there is a path for the global backdrop to become more supportive and perhaps allow for compression between high yield and investment grade spreads within emerging market debts. You know, that would include a weakening of the dollar, that would include global growth remaining, or at least remaining, that would require global growth to at least remain stable, the US dollar to weaken to some degree, and for risk appetite to remain strong and or return in more meaningful ways. And then finally, for the asset class to see a turn in the trend of outflows turning into inflows into the emerging market debt space. And so that in itself could galvanize high yield spread compression and those names with a beta where I think there is at least an incremental improvement in sentiment. You could actually see spread compression moving sufficiently to argue that they regain market access and or external borrowing costs are less punitive and therefore would be at levels acceptable to them to reissue. I think Kenya may be one of those cases. They are, of course, looking at alternative methods of financing the repayment of their $2 billion Eurobond. They are looking at syndicated loans, which have been part of the financing under this fiscal year. I've heard that they may be receiving further $100 million in that form by the end of this month. They are speaking to regional development banks for further forms of financing, and they are looking at other forms of commercial financing. I don't think that Kenya has reached far-fetched stages in discussing potential other non-conventional solutions in sustainable space, but I do know that's one of the options that they're considering. And we've seen, of course, the likes of Egypt already looking at alternative means of financing. So the AFDB has provided a partial guarantee for a panda bond issuance. And so that's going to come at a significantly lower cost than a euro-denominated or dollar-denominated plain vanilla bond. And they, of course, have already ventured into the space of labeled bonds, which could still be an option to them. And then I think all of the names that we've discussed are trying to ensure better performance of domestic resource mobilization. That's a combination of the revenue measures, such as in Kenya's case, the introduction of new taxes and improving administration, but at the same time, also looking at ensuring that they're able to reach domestic financing targets through the issuance of local currency securities, which had been a challenge for Kenya earlier this year, but actually has seen some resolution and meaningful mobilization of funds through the local currency market over the past few weeks, most notably through a seven-year infrastructure bond, which was well absorbed by the domestic market. I think there will be a combination of concessional financing and commercial borrowing. That commercial borrowing may not all be in the form of bonds, but it may increasingly be through loans from commercial banks and development banks. And I think there is, of course, a desire to look at cheaper sources of financing through looking at a special type of issuances like debt for nations swaps, panda bonds, and other forms of labeled bonds. So that's not sustainable, of course.
I was actually hoping to ask you about debt for nature swaps. So Gabon is looking at this type of debt management strategy. We've seen a few from Barbados and others in the emerging market space. I wonder, do you see this as an effective way for distressed sovereigns to manage their debt, or do you think it's more limited to specific situations?
I most certainly think it will have to be limited to certain situations just because of the very diverse state of natural resources that are available to countries, as well as very divergent national approaches to this, as well as the fact that the restructuring of existing debt is going to be done on a case-by-case basis. Gabon has clearly been well progressed in its preservation and conservation efforts, and I think therefore it has been a good candidate for a transaction of this nature. And it's yet to materialize, but it's suggested to be as large as $600 million. Which would be very meaningful and would follow suit in what we've seen in Ecuador. But the other debt for nature swaps that have been marine-based, for instance, are clearly limited to countries that have marine protected areas. And the values of those, I'm not sure, would be able to be substantial and would potentially be able to meet, for instance, a $2 billion external financing requirement. So I don't necessarily see them as the solution, but most certainly may contribute to the solution in meeting the substantial gross external financing needs that the continent faces.
This type of instrument and other initiatives such as SDR reallocation, this will all be discussed at a financing summit in Paris later this month. I wonder what you're expecting out of this summit and what you're hoping to hear from the leaders that are attending.
I think we have muted expectations with respect to the amount of financing that will be committed to climate-related issues, which I think is one of the central issues that will be discussed at this forum. But I do think it will be a very good opportunity to more broadly discuss the financing needs that the continent faces and the role that bilateral creditors will inherently play to this process as creditors that are going through restructuring processes on the continent and that will continue to form meaningful sources of or concessional lending to countries moving forward, whether or not that will be under climate-related, dedicated project financing, budget support, or other forms of developmental aid. Secondly, I think that the SDR discussion is a critical one. The reallocation of SDRs, I think, could be a very meaningful way to increase the amount of capital that can be deployed by regional development banks. The AFDB is aiming to play a critical role in this process and seems like the most likely candidate to be a beneficiary of the potential redeployment of SDRs through multilateral development banks. And so it would be great to see progress in accelerating the pace at which SDRs can be reallocated from rich countries to the low-income country concessional financing windows. And as I mentioned, I think one of the most critical areas that I hope that we do see progress is in the specific cases where restructuring conversations are taking place with the Paris Club and individual countries like Ghana and Zambia. I hope that this would be a platform that could accelerate the pace at which we see those conclusions being reached.
Overall, despite a number of headlines warning of debt risks and debt crises, it sounds like you are quite optimistic or relatively optimistic that this is not going to be the case?
I think that, so with respect to the risk of a broad debt crisis, you know, it is clear that globally debt levels have accelerated at a rapid pace, both for DM as well as EM. You know, that we have seen an unprecedented state of global financial liquidity over the past 15 years in the aftermath of the global financial crises. We've obviously seen an unfortunate confluence of factors over the past 3 years, starting with the COVID crisis and then followed by the Ukraine-Russia war. And at the same time, now more recently, an aggressive tightening of global financial conditions in response to the inflationary pressures in DM in particular, but also that was present in EM. You know, that most certainly contributed to elevated levels of default in EM, as we alluded to earlier, with respect to the high number of countries that faced default in 2022 as well as in 2020. But I think in terms of looking at systemic risks to the asset class, I am not of the view that emerging market debt is facing a systemic risk from the risk associated with debt distress. So where there is a perceived risk of debt distress, I think there is still value in the bonds, given that this is well reflected in the degree to which the bonds have prices have moved lower on this. Plus, I think that the contribution of the countries that are perceived to be at risk of debt distress to the overall asset class as it's represented in its weight to the overall benchmark is actually quite low. So it does not, in my view, form a systemic risk to emerging market debt, nor do I see the probabilities of default as sufficiently high to argue that that is the case. That's not to say that, you know, we are looking for signs of meaningful fiscal consolidation in select names and for solutions that will address the external financing needs over the short term to avoid liquidity problems becoming more meaningful solvency problems over the medium term. One other point I'd like to make on this is that when you look at the low-income countries that the IMF classifies as being in default or at high risk of debt distress, these names are obviously largely in sub-Saharan Africa by virtue of a high presence of LICs in that part of the world. But I'd also like to highlight that many of these countries are not part of emerging market debt benchmarks. So I think this does create a misperception of the risks across the African continent when one hears high risk of debt distress and thinks of emerging market debt and the way in which this may affect the credit space and the asset class as such. Where there has been high risk of debt default, that has already been reflected in the price moves that we've seen. We actually see value in that space because we believe that in some cases it's largely a reflection of liquidity crisis, not of solvency issues. And therefore, you know, that would protect the recovery rates that one would face in the unfortunate event that you would face a restructuring. And secondly, in the countries that we have seen a default already occur, we see bond prices already below what we'd believe to be the recovery once these restructuring processes have been completed.
Thank you so much, Yvette. That's all we have time for today. Thank you for joining us on the podcast. To our listeners, thank you for tuning in to DebtWired. Don't forget, you can download and follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or the Wistia platform.